Good Saturday afternoon, everybody. Hope y'all had a good week. I know we did. We had a busy week.
Busy week.
Especially me.
Yeah.
Exams. Thank y'all for listening today. You're listening to Woods and Water, South Carolina. I'm Taylor, and I'm here with my dad.
Roger.
And I'm taking over as the host today, I think.
No, I just wanted to see if you could introduce the show without crashing and burning.
Listen, I'm a lot more hyper this week.
Yes, you are.
Because, you know, we had Thanksgiving, got to see family, and I only have one more week left of school. So, we're doing good. How about you, Dad? How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
That's good.
Do you realize, I got to figure it out for certain, but like this week, last week, this week, or next week is like our 400th.
Episode?
Woods and Water show.
Wow.
It just hit me.
Imagine.
400 of them. March the...
It was the week...
21st of 2014.
That's right. It was week after my birthday.
Yeah. 400 episodes. The reason I keep track of... I'm an Excel person.
Yeah, you are. And it's kind of weird.
It
must
is.
Be an accounting thing.
It is. It is. I like to do things on Excel. I hate Word, but I love Excel. But we go through and keep track of who's on the show when and all. I was doing some work on the website, getting some stuff posted on the website, some of the podcasts or prior shows or whatever, and updating that list. There's been like 500 guest segments on the show. 270 different guests and like 400. This is like our 400th show.
That's weird.
Well, mine, not yours.
Mine is probably, what would that be for me? It's in the hundreds.
It's in the hundreds. It is, because you've been doing this at least 2 years full time.
Yeah.
But I was talking to Dave Nichols. You remember Dave?
I do.
Dave was
Dave.
Our original
engineer
on this show.
He was amazing. He always used to bring donuts.
Yeah, we had a good time with Dave. And anyway, he said, I can remember the first time Taylor bebopped down the hall and she was 10 years old and just mouth just chattering wide open and all. And I was like, this girl has got the goods.
I still see him, though. He's a professor at North Greenville.
Yeah, he said he sees you every once in a while.
Yeah, I walked past his room this week.
Okay.
And I looked for him. He wasn't in there. I don't know where he was.
Yeah. It's a professor for
Apparently
you.
Apparently, he has a fun class.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
I spoke to his class 1 year.
Really?
Yeah. I did. Marketing class.
Yeah.
But anyway, yes, thank you for listening. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving was just last week. It's hard to believe it's come and gone. Christmas decorations are up.
Yep. Still doesn't quite feel like Christmas yet, but I feel like next week it might get to that.
This week was too warm.
Yeah.
It's really warm.
Uh-huh. It was really awkward because it was like, you know, in the morning when he left the house, it was like 40 and then it got up to like 70-something.
I wonder how many people ditched the tree stand and went fishing this past.
Honestly.
Like Thursday or Friday.
Honestly. Now, next week's supposed to be in the 50s. You best believe we will be in the deer stand next week.
Exams will be over for you next week.
Well, most of them.
Most of them.
I still have one the next week, but then we're
not. But the majority of them will be out of the way by Wednesday, so we're going to.
Yep.
We're gonna.
I'm almost done with my first semester of senior year. I only have one more semester left in high school.
Yeah, I know you want it to pass by, but one of these days you're going to look back at what I wouldn't do to be a senior high school again.
Well, no, I'd probably go back to my sophomore year. Sophomore year was good.
Was it good?
Yes, it was.
Right. Well, anyway, enough about us. Mm-hmm. Hope y'all are doing well. But, yeah, had a good Thanksgiving. It's passing fast. And we got to sit down and do some scheduling for next year. But we're gonna talk to I should have had this prepared. We're gonna talk about SeaWe.
Yeah, one of our favorite.
We got
things
the
to
executive
go
director of SeaWe is gonna be with us.
He's looking for something.
I looked at another email and like, do what? Jeez Louise. And why is it all the way down at the bottom? There's like eight.
Eight what?
Well, it's been an email chain back and forth.
Oh.
And there's my first one. Megan Trotter. Trotter is the girl that I'm working with down there at Seawee, and she set this up. And I've got him next segment, and I'll have this. Oh, well. This is pretty bad. This is pretty bad. Anyway, executive director of Seawee is going to be in. And this is the email it should be in right here. I mean, this is just stupid.
Minor details.
Oh, well. John Powell. That's right there in front of me. John Powell, executive director of Seawee, is going to be with us. And talking about Seawee coming in February, kind of going to give you a preview. Mm-hmm. Try to be fun. And then we got a little calendar event, so let's get with it. Brought to you by Visit Anderson and
Green Pond Landing and Event Center.
In no certain order. In fact, I'm going to get the first one out of the way.
Yeah.
Toys for Tots. Yep. Always big at this time of the year.
Yep.
One of the drop-off locations is Falcon Bass Boats in Newberry, South Carolina. They have some boxes up there, and they would love for you to stop by and drop off a new, unused toy or two. And support Toys for Tots, which is, Tim Dupree's son is a sergeant in the Marine Corps, so that's how they're connected to the Marine Corps. Hmm. And Toys for Tots is put on by the U.S. Marine Corps. So if you want to get involved, there you go. Swing by on the main drag in Newberry, South Carolina, stop in and say hello to Lisa and Tim and all the people down at Falcon Bass Boats, and leave a toy for some kid who might not get one this Christmas.
Hunters for the Hungry is putting on their annual giveaway, and it's going to include some really nice guns. They're going to be doing the drawing live on Facebook on December 14th at 6 o'clock. It's $25 per ticket, so go to their website to enter.
National Wild Turkey Federation chapter, the Neil Gobbler Cost chapter in Greenwood, South Carolina, is having their Hunting Heritage Banquet on December the 9th at Piedmont Technical College. Doors open at 6 o'clock. He's always Save the Habitat, Save the Hunt. For tickets, contact Mike Waters, 864-993-2291, or go to nwtf.org. Go to events near you, South Carolina, find the Greenwood chapter, and hit it. It'll give you all the information and probably buy tickets right online.
Striped Bass Challenge is coming to Lake Hartwell for their Winter Classic January 7th through the 8th. They are going to be sharing the information on January 7th, their captain's meeting. You can go to their Facebook page to get in the email loop, and you can get more information there.
And, this used to be run by Mike Dillon mm-hmm. at Richard Childress Racing. We've had Mike on several times talking about this. This is a new, they brought back the challenge. They've actually got a trail this year, and they're going to be on with us, I think, on next week's show, I think is what we've got kind of in the works for next week.
Okay.
But the cool thing about that is they, at the captain's meeting, the boats come in filled with food, and it benefits the local food bank. It used to be Golden Harvest. I'm not sure who the beneficiary is this year. We'll know next week. But, yeah, all the teams and captains and all fill boats up with food, and as they come through registration and all, they weigh it up and all. It's amazing how much food they collect at these things. That's a really cool thing with the Striped Bass Challenge.
You're next.
Oh, I'm next. Okay. the Southern Bird Hunters Association is having an amateur walking shooting dog championship down in Pamlico, South Carolina, hosted by the Gamecock Field Trial Club. And they got amateur derby and amateur puppy, and it's going to be at Rodney Poston's Farm, which is in Pamlico, South Carolina. If you go to Southern Bird Hunters Association, you can find out more information. This is a good one to be. This is your starting off.
The Foothills NDA banquet is coming up on February 10th, which is a Thursday, so save the date on that and go to their website to register.
More details coming. We had a board meeting this week, and there's more stuff coming. I'm trying to figure out food. Y'all hang on. We'll be back. More Woods and Water, South Carolina, on the other side. You know what I didn't do, Taylor?
What didn't you do?
I don't think I did. I need to look
did
and
what?
See. Huh?
Don't think you did what?
I don't think I did. Oh, I didn't. Doggone
it. Did you have special music picked out?
No, but we should have done the Darius. And.
Oh, we haven't done that in a while.
We're taking it easy. We have a first-time guest. Yeah, that's usually what we do with first-time guests, but we'll give them a pass.
Because you know what time it is.
What time is it?
It's time to talk about our favorite event. A lot of people's New Year starts on January 1st. Ours starts on February at SeaWeek.
Valentine's Day weekend, folks. If you have never been to the Southeastern Wildlife Exposition in Charleston, South Carolina, you have missed out on, John, 40 years now?
40 years.
40 years.
It'll be 40 years.
Wow. And we hate we didn't have it last year. It was disheartening last year. It was a morbid weekend around our house.
Yeah, it was. Kind of felt a little lost.
It did. Felt a little lost. But we're a couple months out from SeaWee. It's time to make your plans to get there. And doing that, we'd like to have somebody on from SeaWee. We got John Powell, who is you're the executive chairman, John. Did I get that right?
Executive director.
There we go. A first-time guest, so welcome to Woods and Water, South Carolina. We appreciate you taking time out of your day to be here with us. And SeaWee, man, we're excited about it. We're excited to talk about it. People, if you need to break out pens and pencils and notepads to take notes on some of the things you might want to do when you get there, now's the time to do it. But, John, if you would, take a minute or two. Tell us about yourself, your duties there with the Southeastern Wildlife Exposition, and then we're going to get into this thing and roll with it.
Okay. Well, you got it. My name is John Powell. I'm the executive director of Southeastern Wildlife Exposition. I've been around for a while now. 2022 will be my 17th show.
Wow.
I am originally from Greenville, North Carolina. Grew up rural North Carolina. I've always enjoyed the outdoors. And I won't give you the full history of how I wound up in Charleston, but when I did, I found a spot at SeaWee and have never left. And it's a lot of fun. It's an interesting thing to do, to work all year for a 3++ day event that hopefully you can have every year.
Right.
But it's a lot of fun. Anything that involves the outdoors, you know, land-based pursuits, water-based, and you know what I've come to really love, which is the center of our event, Wildlife Art.
Yes.
It's really exciting.
Do you take a day or two off after SeaWee, or do you immediately start working on next year?
So we do, but it's not right away.
Okay.
If you think about it, we got a lot of packing up to do.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, hopefully we've had good sales with artists. There's some vendors that need to be paid. A lot of people have questions. Every now and then a driver's license or a set of keys might have gone missing. And, you know, we have a lot of wrap up and want to let people know what we're doing. But sometimes the planning for our event really starts 18 months out. When you
wow.
talk about who our featured artist might be.
Okay.
Or, you know, a featured entertainer like a Jeff Corwin or a Jack Hanna. You got to book those things pretty far out. So, and, you know, something like Doc Dogs, when we bring those guys in, we have a multi-year agreement to make sure that they're here. So a lot of this starts much earlier than people think.
Wow, I wouldn't have thought 18 months, but you're right.
Yeah.
Those the big names book up years in advance.
That's true.
Wow.
And people want to make their plans, and we also fall in an event cycle in Charleston with you know, the Bridge Run and Wine and Food and Spoleto and these others, and so, you know, people want to know what our dates are.
Yep.
Hotels want to know what our dates are. They don't necessarily want to book a big conference during the same weekend.
Sure.
And we're always Presidents' Day weekend. So while we fall into that Valentine's week, that's how people can remember. We're the weekend that precedes Presidents' Day Monday every year.
Every year. This year being February 17th through the 20th.
That's correct. We're having the general admission is 18th through the 20th. The 17th will be one of our VIP events, the preview gala.
Gotcha. I'm going to turn you loose and let you talk, but for folks out there, if you go to the SeaWee website, which is SeaWee.com, right to the homepage, of course, there's a lot there. If you scroll down maybe two-thirds to three-quarters down the page, there's something called SeaWee 101. And, of course, you got the South Carolina State dog there, the little Boykin Spaniel. And it says, learn everything you need to know before you go to SeaWee, including general show information, helpful information, and even the dog policy. Because Hey, if you go to SeaWee and you're a dog person,
get ready to meet some dogs.
That's right. You're going to go about every 60 yards. You're going to run into another friend. But it does. I wanted to, and I told you I wanted to get this first. Artists frequently ask questions. The exhibitors, the collector. You got events, map parking and shuttles. Kids frequently ask questions, and then even the dogs, you know, but can I bring my dog to SeaWee? Where's it allowed? You know, all that stuff. So I wanted people to know that's out there because we're going to cover a lot of ground on SeaWee. It's going to raise a lot of questions with some people, and I wanted them to know that on the front page, just roll down the front of that page to SeaWee 101. There's a lot of the questions, a lot of the answers you may need. What is your favorite? I mean, you talked about the water, the land, and the art. What's if you had to put your finger on something at SeaWee that you enjoy the most, what would it be?
Trick question right out of the gate.
No, not a trick question. No, yeah, you're not offending anybody because everybody's got a favorite.
So I alluded to it earlier. I didn't know a tremendous amount about wildlife art before I started at Southeastern Wildlife. And when you walk into the ballroom at Charleston Place Hotel, our fine art gallery, you know, there are 100 artists there, painters, sculptors, carvers, and the artists are present with their work. If you take a minute to think about it, it's an extremely unique experience to have that. I mean, lots of galleries have wildlife artists, but they're not, you know, they'll have special shows for individual artists, but very rarely will you see this many artists in one spot at one time. So if you're a lover of wildlife art, you want to be at Southeastern Wildlife Exposition. There's some big art events out west, but there's really nothing east of the Mississippi that even compares to the lineup of artists that we bring here. And you become friends with the artists, collectors meet the artists in person, and it's an added layer of involvement in the purchase of wildlife art. And it's a very relaxed atmosphere. There's no sales pitch. A lot of people are just admiring the work and yes, meeting the artist. But you do have very serious collectors that are here from all over the country. And that's, you know, one small part, but a very important part of how we exist today, because the event started with wildlife art and will always be the central focus. Even though a lot of people see Marion Square, Brittle Bank Park, or some of these other exhibit sites and think of just the demonstrations, birds of prey flights, these sorts of things, and think that's SeaWee. It's, you know, the core of it's really at Charleston Place in that gallery, and everything is built out from there. So that is my favorite place. It's where I see a lot of people reunited. You know, SeaWee's a reunion for old friends.
Sure.
You know, not only from throughout South Carolina, but throughout the Southeast. You all see sure. it. You run into people that you haven't seen in a long time.
Right.
Whether those relationships were from school or from, you know, from being a field with guys that you met at one point. It's a lot of fun. The general atmosphere is one of a good time, as you know, and I think the reunion aspect is what we hit on a lot of the time.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he brought it, but to have the artist sitting right there and you get to talk to them, and what I've learned over the years is when they do those paintings, I mean, they were there to see and get the inspiration of that painting. They put it on, and the thing that amazes me is I grew up quail hunting. And so, you know, when I walk by an artist booth and I see a picture of a covey rise or a setter, you know, flagging mm-hmm. tail and everything, you know, my heart just flips. Sorry, folks. It's just the way it rolls with me.
You are such a sucker.
And you get to talking to some of the artists about it. And a lot of them are bird hunters or have dogs. And they, you know, they're in it. They're not just doing this because they like to sell art. They do it because this is their passion.
I think another thing for that is, like, they're putting their happy place on a canvas
and giving it to somebody to enjoy for the rest of their lives. Yep. Yeah. That's good stuff.
I love that you said that. And what's interesting is they see a place or they've seen a place and they paint it. And
yes.
And mm-hmm. It's almost the reverse from a purchase standpoint. You walk by a piece and you look at it and you say, I've seen that before.
Yeah.
You know, so
yes.
It sort of comes full circle.
Yeah.
Even if it's not the exact same space. And to your point, I grew up trying to chase a few of the last wild birds in Eastern North Carolina, and I've had a chance to go since I've lived in South Carolina and down into Georgia, and it's extraordinary how some of these artists can capture the bird, the scene, the sort of the spirit of the hunt. There are a lot of different aspects of that, and you know, not all the pieces are purely wildlife. Some are sporting,
sure.
And so Yeah, and you can spend all day there.
Yes,
yeah.
you can.
I can spend all day talking about, you know, that one exhibit site.
Yep.
So that's kind of where I started.
And for guys like me who have trouble drawing stick figures, it's even more amazing.
I can't do that. Yeah, I'm all of that aspect, too. That, yeah.
Taylor, we got about 2 minutes. I want to know your favorite. We're not going to talk over him very much, but I want to know what's your favorite, quickly.
Doc Dogs.
Doc Dogs. I knew that was going. I knew you were going there.
Yep.
Mine, over the years, has become
food.
The South. She knows me so well because I drag her kicking and screaming. It just, you know, I love the Brittlebank part. I love the art because I get lost into it. But man, you go into that food tent. And you have the chef demonstrations off to one side, and you quit laughing at me, Taylor. But that is what makes SeaWee so much fun, because it is so diverse and there's so much to see, mm-hmm. and that is the beauty of SeaWee. We got about a minute left.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I'm gonna jump on that. South Carolina Department of Agriculture. They've been an incredible partner, and I call it a partnership. It truly works. I mean, you've seen how busy that place is.
Oh, it is.
To connect the farmers, you know, to the end users, to talk about organic, talk about South Carolina grown. It works, and people really get it. And not only do they, you know, they follow up, they purchase these products. So it's a great partnership. You know, we're going to have demonstrations all weekend long, hosted by the Lee brothers. And that's become such an important part of the anchor, if you will, of Marion Square. So I'm glad you touched on that.
Yeah, but I do. I love the Birds of Prey. I love the Doc Dogs.
Oh, yeah,
Birds of Prey.
I love
the exhibitors and the outfitters out at Brittlebank. And, you know, it's just...
There's too much to choose
there
from.
There is. It's too much. But, yeah, if I had to do with the food, would
food.
Food
I knew.
Would be it.
I knew it. I knew
it's okay.
It.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm honest.
I think it's interesting. We all picked a different exhibit.
Yes,
site.
Yep. Absolutely.
That's part of it. Marion Square, Charleston Place, and Brittlebank. And the only two we left out were the Gilliard Center and Marriott, and they both are unique in what they have to offer.
Yep. Absolutely. All right. Good start to it, Taylor. Got one more segment talking about SeaWee. Hang around, John, and we'll continue the next segment. The rest of you, take a break. We'll be back on the other side with more Woods and Water South Carolina. Quit wrinkling your nose.
Sometimes I just wonder.
Quit wrinkling your nose. This is good stuff.
In your opinion. Like I said.
This is classic stuff.
Like I said, in your opinion.
Of course.
Listen.
Weird-looking John O'Kasich.
Oh, my goodness.
Who dated a supermodel. That's the funny thing about it. Not John O'Kasich. What? Can you help me out, John? I used your first name. Rick O'Kasich. That's
I was
it.
Hoping you're just talking about me.
No.
I'm going way up.
No, Rick O'Kasich, and his main squeeze was some supermodel. Mm. I mean, he really looks weird. Look him up.
I don't want to.
Yeah, but they make great music. Cars make great music. We are back. Third segment of the show, and the second segment with John from SeaWee. Hope you will. Mark off on your calendars now, 17th is special events, so the 18th to the 20th in Charleston, South Carolina. You know, you don't have to. There's tons of hotels. You don't have to stay downtown. You can stay out somewhere. But, yeah, make your plans now to be in attendance at SeaWee. It's one of a kind, and I think we've talked about it in prior visits from people with SeaWee. I mean, there's just nothing like that in the eastern U.S., I mean, we just had Easton Waterfowl Festival. I mean, that might come a little close with a little bit of art and all, but it's a far smaller event. I've been up to it once. But, man, SeaWee's a great one. So, John, mm-hmm. when we ended the last segment, you mentioned two other venues. Everybody thinks Brittlebank, everything's Charleston Place Hotel, and then Marion Square. But there, the two other locations that you had, you mentioned just in passing. I'd like for you to take just a minute and talk about those two locations and what's there.
Sure. So the Gilliard Center, where you'll find a lot of artists and like artisans, craftsmen, whether it's a knife maker, a wood turner, specialty shop of any sort. We have almost 70 exhibitors in the exhibit hall side of the Gilliard Center. And then on the performance hall side is where you'll find Bush Wildlife Sanctuary, which is been extremely popular over the years. And then Jeff Corwin, who's coming back, he was here in 2019 to do some animal performances. So if you're looking for an animal show that's indoors, you'll go there. If you're looking to do a little shopping and find some outdoor products, a lot of them are handmade originals. You'll see those on the exhibit hall side.
Okay. All right.
And then the Marriott, the other site we mentioned, is very specific. It's where we have antique and some working decoys, and you'll maybe even find some folk art. Okay. Copley Fine Art Auctions out of the Northeast. They're going to have their winter sale preview. So we'll have about 200 lots that people can view before they have a sale a couple of weeks later. And there are also antique dealers that are there. So they have tables and they're set up. And you know, you can view some accessible decoys and some that are extremely, extremely expensive to that niche audience.
Yes.
But it's neat to see them. It's they call the decoy sort of the original American art form.
Yes. So yes.
You can learn a lot there just by looking around.
Oh, you can. And I started out, as all duck hunters start out, with the Flambeau decoys. You might upgrade to G&H decoys. I was introduced to a few guys that ran a company called Run Amuck Decoys, George Williams and a couple of the guys up in Rhode Island. And over time I got a bunch of their cork decoys, and I don't have anything expensive, a collector's edition, but I love it. It's something about that handmade decoy. Just looking at it, Taylor, you remember duck hunting with those things?
Yeah.
How, I mean, they're just different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, back in time.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the cork bodies, the wooden heads, cedar keels, you know.
I remember carrying them, and one of the beaks hit my shin, and I had a bruise for like a couple weeks because they were so hard.
But yeah, so that's the decoy side. It kind of tugs at your heart like the quail side. Mm-hmm. Let's talk just for a couple minutes about the two other areas that have a lot going on. When people think about CWE, and these are both outdoor venues, this is where a lot of stuff goes. Marion Square, Bittlenick Park. Take a couple minutes, tell us what's going to happen to each one of those, and then we got some wrap up stuff we want to do.
Sure. Marion Square is, you know, it right in the heart of Peninsula Charleston. So if you're going to be staying down there, if you're going to go to some of the retail shops, which we hope people support, as well as the restaurants, then you're going to find a lot of our conservation based exhibits. So we already spoke about South Carolina Department of Agriculture,
sure,
and their tent, but the Center for Birds of Prey, which is a huge partner of CWE. They do some incredible work. They're located just up the road in Awdall. They have flight demonstrations. The Orianne Society out of Georgia, you know, they tell a story about prescribed burning and the eastern indigo snake and the gopher tortoise and how these things are all connected. And that's always interesting to a quail hunter, I can assure you.
Oh, yes.
And you tie in the longleaf forest. Ducks Unlimited has a huge presence down there. And then whether it's dog rescues or some of our government agencies, the guys that are men and women, I should say, that do the really selfless work to, you know, whether it's enforcement, protection, research with U.S. Fish and Wildlife, South Carolina Department of Natural Resources, and the list goes on. You'll have these groups there, and they're all telling the same story of conservation, maybe from a different angle, but it's where you can learn a lot about what's at the core of seaweed, not just the art, but the wildlife and the conservation based stories that have led us here.
Then we jump over to Bittlenick Park.
And as you mentioned, you know, dock dogs. I'm sorry, Taylor mentioned dock dogs,
yes,
and, which is wildly popular. But Bittlenick is almost a festival unto itself. There is, you know, we have over 100 exhibitors throughout the park. You have a kids area, canine demonstrations. We have herding demonstrations from Bill Coburn and Wendy Knoll Farms. You have a lot of our local friends from Boykin Spaniel Society to do the retriever demonstrations. Purina's come on board this year as a sponsor. They're going to help run some demonstrations with some really fine dogs.
Nice.
And then you have our Sporting and Marine Village, where you'll find outfitters and products on both, again, land-based and marine-based pursuits. Right now, weather permitting, you know, how this ties in is a much longer story, but the U.S. Coast Guard is going to do a search and rescue demo off the banks of the Ashley River on Saturday.
Cool.
Saturday. You know, something to keep people interested and busy, because the dogs, dogs will jump all day long. You'll also find food vendors there.
Yes.
And some of our sponsors have big displays. Yep. You can get a sandwich. You can find a Coca-Cola Classic. You can find a beer. You can find enough to do and hang out all day long. So,
and usually you have some little live music going on out there too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All day long.
Yep. 3 minutes left. You wanted to talk about some of the special events that you sometimes don't get the coverage that the main 3 days get.
Sure. I mean, I can start with our VIP program, which for the most part is sold out. There are some packages left.
Okay.
Some of those are patron packages. And one of the things the patron package gets you is access to Preview Afternoon, which has become one of the most popular, ways to view art because it's the first crack at it. So, Thursday afternoon, from 1 until 5, you have access to the ballroom. We have light hors d'oeuvres and food and drink, and you can peruse the gallery before it gets really busy during the weekend. So that's popular. We also have the Low Country Social, which is a CV event. That's Saturday night under the stars at Brittle Bank. And that's oysters and barbecue. Again, some live music. And it's a lot of fun. We do a bunch of giveaways with our corporate partners and special event partners. And then we have our conservation organization special events that we help promote. So Ducks Unlimited has one of their biggest fundraisers in the country Friday night during Sea Week downtown the Visitor Center bus shed. They have live auction and raffles. Also, South Carolina Waterfowl Association has multiple events. They have one Friday and Saturday night just over the bridge in Mount Pleasant.
Right.
So if you go on our website and you go to special events, you can find out how to view these. Also, the Charleston Safari Club is having an event on Wednesday night of CV this year. That's the first time we've helped promote that. And they do a lot of great youth education. There is fundraising for that. So go to our website. I'm sure I'm missing some. Garden and Gun is a great partner of ours.
Okay.
They host lectures on both Saturday and Sunday. Those details are going to be loaded on our website probably today or tomorrow.
Okay.
But people have a lot of fun with that. You have a cocktail, listen to some great conversation at Garden and Gun's offices, which is a really neat place. So, again, TV.com, you'll find out information on all these events. And you need to get it fast. I'd be remiss if I didn't say that things weren't selling out very quickly this year. I think everybody knows there's a pent-up demand.
So sure.
I encourage people to make hotel reservations, restaurant reservations, and get their tickets sooner rather than later. That's not a sales pitch. That's just a
fact of life.
We're running out.
Yes, sir. Fact of life. CME.com events page. If you want to get a real flavor for everything that's going on, it covers everything that we've covered, some more stuff. Gosh, Taylor, anything?
The
Scout Boat Raffle.
Sold out.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Wow.
Typically, it lasts into the end of the show.
But right.
You know, Scout's been a great partner of ours for the last, almost 10 years.
Yes.
And we sold it out in record time. That's a great example of, and we'll run some more raffles. It's part of what helps support SeaWee and allows us to support, you know, to create this platform for other conservation organizations. So we hope to have some of those online soon. And you'll find some during the weekend when people have fun playing. And
sure.
It certainly builds the excitement.
Absolutely. Well, John, we have thoroughly enjoyed our time with you on the show today. Mm-hmm. Folks, 18th to the 20th in Charleston, Southeastern Wildlife Expo. We will be there. Look for us. John, thank you for your time. Look forward
to
seeing
you.
Thank
you both so much. Thanks for the opportunity. Absolutely. Thank you for coming to SeaWee. Thanks for being fans.
Absolutely. Love it. Wouldn't miss it. Y'all hang on. We will be back after the break with the final segment of the show for this week. Just a little bit, give you a little southern, a little low country vibe there.
It's too cold for this. Makes you want to go to the beach.
Well, that's where we're going. SeaWee.
Oh, we are going to SeaWee, actually. Yeah.
Why but do
it's
you still think
gonna
I inserted that bumper
still
music
be in
there?
It's February, though, so
well,
it's still
all right.
Cold.
It's all right. You know, one of my favorite things, and we talked about SeaWee and all that. It's what we do after SeaWee that's really cool.
What do we do when we leave Seawee?
Oh boy, I don't remember.
Well, that's because we didn't do it last year.
Yeah.
So think back to the year before. I wore you out dragging you all over a certain wildlife management area in the Lowcountry chasing ducks with the camera.
Oh!
Gosh.
Bear Island.
Bear Island.
Goodness gracious alive. Yes, I do, in fact, remember that because that was kind of chilly.
Yes, it was.
But it was so daggum cool.
It's just a neat place.
I've never seen so many birds in one place in my entire life.
Everywhere. Mm-hmm. Then the guys that were rabbit hunting, the small game rabbit hunters down there with all the beagles
all
and the kids.
With all the little puppy beagles.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's just a cool place.
Yeah, it is.
And that's the nice thing about going to the South Carolina Lowcountry. There are always add-ons. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what you're doing. There is always a place. And it's that way statewide. But it just seems like for us living in the upstate when we go to the coast, mm-hmm. having those add-ons is just really, really cool.
Not that we don't have them up here. Cause we got
plenty up here, too.
But we're so used to these up here, it's nice to have a change.
Yes. It takes you about an hour and a half to get to Bear because it's just you have to go down 17 South and then – Green Pond Road and all the way to the end.
You gotta get there early.
Yes, get there at daybreak.
You gotta bring your binoculars. You gotta bring a camera. You gotta wear camo.
Walking boots. Good boots.
Good boots that can get wet.
Yeah.
And muddy.
It's the low country, and there are some low spots and ditches and
the smell, though.
It
smells so good. I love fluff mud.
Mud makes our bass bigger.
I saw that shirt.
Georgetown, South Carolina. Yes. Couple of, I guess, notes of interest and just some stuff to
remember.
Kind of clear we're trying to clear through some stuff here at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. This came out, the Department of Natural Resources. If you boat down in the Lowcountry, there is a seasonal no-wake zone that starts at the Isle of Palms Connector and goes, well, actually, I think seasonally, is it? Yeah, it's Isle of Palms Connector. Mm-hmm. And it goes all the way up past the Isle of Palms Marina, all the way up to the entrance of the creek. Not the creek going in the marina, the creek coming out of the marina. That makes a big loop through there. And this just came out from the Department of Natural Resources. Due to an increase in boating traffic at Goat Island
and
Isle of Palms. Yeah,
surprising. I never thought that would become a popular boat traffic place.
It is. A permanent no-wake zone to encourage safe boating is being established. This new permanent no-wake zone is illustrated by the red line on the graphic. So, of course, you can't see the red line on the graphic, but let me explain to you. I wonder which hole that is on the golf course. You know, there's a golf course that parallels the Intercoastal Waterway. And here's a bit of history for you. That golf course used to be a landing strip.
You actually told me that.
Yes. The golf course at Isle of Palms, if you're down in Isle of Palms and the golf course runs parallel to the Intercoastal Waterway, there used to be a landing strip there. It was just a dirt grass strip with a little shack, had a Coke machine. My parents lived in Charleston back in the 60s, and that's where my dad learned to fly down at Mr. Scott's Field, which was on James Island, yes. Yeah, across the river from the Executive Airport used to be Mr. Scott's Airport, and that's where my dad learned to fly J3 Cubs, and there was a landing strip. Gosh, this is getting way off the beaten trail here.
Yeah, it is.
There was a landing strip where the radio station is in Mount Pleasant, right? As you go across the bridge, mm-hmm. there was a landing strip out through there. And Dad said it was horrible. No, he said it was horrible because it had high pine trees on both sides.
Depending
on the wind, I mean, you could be crabbing for all you're worth trying to get down, and buddy, the second you got out of the wind, you know, you're into the pine trees. Now, he never really said it was just a difficult runway to get in and out of. But where the Isle of Palms, the golf course is up there, is where there used to be a landing strip. And Dad used to go up there and touch down and drink a Coke. My dad was a hanger flyer. He liked to fly around to other small little grass strips, hang out, chat, have a Coke, fly back home. Anyway, so after and they give coordinates here, but essentially if you're coming up, past the Isle of Palms Connector, you know, you got the Isle of Palms Connector, you got the creek comes in right there past it on the right, and then you've got the golf course is off to the right-hand side. Well, the last hole that parallels the golf, the Intercoastal Waterway, is where this new one starts. So it starts, a little bit before Morgan Grill, kind of right there where all the houses start. There's a good one. I think there's an inlet there, a small inlet you can get into. I think I fished back in there just a little bit. But anyway, the new one goes from there all the way up past Isle of Palms Marita, through the bend, and at the end of the bend where the – is that Duncan Creek?
Mm-mm.
What creek is that? Morgan Creek.
Yeah.
Morgan Creek. Where Morgan Creek comes back in at the upper end of Wild Dunes is where the new permanent no-wake zone is. Which means you'll have a lot of people plowing through there now.
Oh, don't even get started on that.
Jeez Louise.
That was like my biggest pet peeve.
No wake means no wake. It doesn't mean throttle back where you plow and throw a bigger
than your boat
than when you're on plane.
Yeah.
Which always messed me up with no wake zones in my boat. My boat throws off. It throws off no wake on plane. Sorry. Anyway, so that's just one of those things. So progress. New permanent no wake zone.
I'm gonna switch gears and go back to hunting.
Okay.
Or
anything outdoors.
Well, what?
That could do with anything outdoors.
True. Yeah. But I guess right now it can apply to
hunting
season.
Okay.
So we know down here it can be as low as 40 degrees in the morning and get up to, like 60, like high 60s.
30 to 70.
30 to 70, yeah.
Okay.
But but the big thing that you need to be aware of is being prepared. Now, you can't go into the stand and be like, oh, I don't need this jacket because it's just going to get hot later. But you never know how the weather could change. And when the sun starts coming up, that it starts getting colder right as the sun comes up, and then it gets warmer. So you always have to be prepared. So in this thing, we're going to talk about hypothermia. Now, that hypothermia can occur with temperatures as high as 50 degrees. Now, I know that sounds weird, but it can.
Anything can lower your body core temperature can cause hypothermia.
Yeah. So a big thing about this is we always talk about being prepared before the hunt, and one of the main things is checking the weather before you go. I mean, most of us check the wind before we go, but we need to check the temperatures. See what it's supposed to be like so you can be prepared. So main thing is just dress in warm layers. Then that could be a pain. If you get out of the stand, if you're the person that goes in before sun comes up, get out of the stand around lunchtime, then that can be a pain. But it's worth it when you're in the stand because you're not moving. Your body's not warming up. So you're just going to be sitting there shivering. You never know what could happen with hypothermia. Just make sure to check the weather. Check hourly to be prepared for that.
Absolutely. We're going to break some dirt here. Wildlife habitat conservation and that is a year-round thing. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk a lot in the springtime about plowing and planting, in the fall plowing and planting, but there's very rarely do we do anything in the winter. Michael Hook talks about wintertime disking and all, but very rarely do we do a whole lot in the wintertime. Well, that's going to change this year because we're going to plant some persimmon trees.
Yep.
Been talking about it for a couple of years. Found a nursery in Georgia that's got them. We have an American persimmon that is probably 50 feet tall.
And it's pretty popular with the deer around
and the coyotes.
Yeah.
And this and the raccoons.
Okay.
Look, I was sitting there 2 years ago, and I heard crunching in the leaves. I'm like, bow hunting season's fixing to get good. And here comes this fat little raccoon waddling up. And there weren't a whole lot on the ground, and he stands up on his back legs, and he just looks up into the tree like,
oh, if only I could reach.
Yeah, only I could fly. But anyway, persimmon trees, you can do this anywhere. Mm-hmm. Persimmons are really good to eat. Mm-hmm. And American persimmon trees, of course, you have to have male and female, so you have to plant like three or four. They encourage you to plant three or four because you don't know which was the male and which is the female, and you've got to have a pollinator. But now you have the Asian varieties of persimmon trees, the fuyus,
how many kinds are there? I thought they were like...
There's like eight or nine of them.
That's what I thought.
There's one even called chocolate persimmon.
That's weird, but okay.
But, there's tineshes and giant fuyus and some of the others. We're going to plant three. I did call, because one of the questions I had was, if you plant... Because you get early There are stringent, non-astringent persimmons. You can look that up later. There are ones that ripen in September, ones that ripen in November. So we're trying to do a mix where we get a ripening and falling starting about the time bow season starts and running all the way into the 1st of December. So one of the questions I had was, if I plant this variety and that variety together, do I get cross-pollinization? The answer is no. She did say that when they're in close proximity to other varieties that the persimmons may have a seed or two in them. Normally on their own they won't, but that is the only downside. And I said, well, really, deer and those don't care about seeds anyway. And she goes, she laughs. She goes, no, really, not really. So, but yeah, persimmon trees. We're going to do some of the different varieties and all. They're pretty good. They like, apprentice are, you know, soil tests. They like loamy, organically rich soil, well drained, moderate fertility. Some of them are more hardy than others. Check your USDA climate zones and all. Mm-hmm. pHs between 6 and 6.5. You can do soil tests. Light needs the best and most fruits will be produced when persimmon trees are growing in full sun. However, trees that receive a little shade during the hottest part of the summer days will still produce great crops of fruit. So you dig a big old hole 3 times the size of the root ball. That loosens the dirt up. Lets the roots expand. You can do a little bit of root fertilizer if you want to. Plant, you know, and you can even do a berm to catch the waterfall. So look into it. Not many people plant persimmon trees, but it's something that all wildlife like in the fall of the year, and they're even good to eat. Thanks for tuning in. Y'all have a great week. We'll see you back here next week. In the meantime, make time to get out there.
Take the back roads when you can.
Don't forget the camera. See you back here next week. More Woods and Water, South Carolina. My mind.